This is Kenneth Doust, and welcome to New World Notes, installment number 107, Airport Security and Related Scams.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Today, let's have some fun as well as seriousness. America is being shoved more and more in the direction of a police state, shoved by its rulers. God knows the citizens of this nominal democracy want nothing of the sort. Back in the old days, say the early 1990s, things were not all right with the world. And we could see this manifested, or at least our artists could see this manifested, most clearly at the airport. Here you could see, in living color, the use of language by the powerful to hammer the average citizen into a docile, trusting, obedient frame of mind. You may recall three installments of this program in which John Taylor Gatto brilliantly argued that this is the principal function of public schooling, to train citizens in the habits of not thinking critically, of docility, and of obedience to any authority figure, whether it be the teacher, the Secretary of Defense, or the salesman on TV. He might have added, or even a lowly airline flight attendant. This is all bad enough in itself, and it paved the way for even worse outrages. But let's start with this. Here's George Carlin at the airport, focusing on the authorities' Orwellian abuse of language to cow you into docile compliance.
Something else we have in common, flying on the airlines and listening to the airlines' announcements and trying to pretend to ourselves that the language they're using is really English. Doesn't seem like it to me. They might tell you you're on a non-stop flight. Well, I don't think I care for that. No, I insist that my flight stop. Preferably at an airport. It's those sudden, unscheduled cornfield and housing development stops that seem to interrupt the flow of my day. Here's one they just made up. Near miss. When two planes almost collide, they call it a near miss. It's a near hit. A collision is a near miss. Look, they nearly missed. Yes, but not quite. They might tell you your flight has been delayed because of a change of equipment. Broken plane. Then they mentioned carry-on luggage. First time I heard carry-on, I thought they were going to bring a dead deer on board. I thought, what the hell do they mean with that? Don't they have the little TV dinners anymore? Then I thought, carry on, there's going to be a party. People are going to be carrying on the plane. Well, I don't care for that. I like a serious attitude on the plane, especially on the flight deck, which is the latest euphemism for cockpit. Can't imagine why they wouldn't want to use a lovely word like cockpit, can you? Especially with all those stewardesses going in and out of it all the time. As soon as they close the door to the aircraft, that's when they begin the safety lecture. I love the safety lecture. This is my favorite part of the airplane ride. I listen very carefully to the safety lecture, especially that part where they teach us how to use the seat belts. Imagine this. Here we are, a plane full of grown human beings, many of us partially educated, and they're actually taking time out to describe the intricate workings of a belt buckle.
Place the small metal flap into the buckle.
Well, I asked for clarification at that point. The safety lecture continues.
In the unlikely event...
This is a very suspect phrase. Especially coming as it does from an industry that is willing to lie about arrival and departure times.
In the unlikely event of a sudden change in cabin pressure.
Roof flies off.
An oxygen mask will drop down in front of you. Place the mask over your face and breathe normally.
Well, I have no problem with that. I always breathe normally when I'm in a 600-mile-an-hour uncontrolled vertical dive. I also normally. Right in my pants! They tell you to adjust your oxygen mask before helping your child with his.
I did not need to be told that.
In fact, I'm probably going to be too busy screaming to help him at all. This will be a good time for him to learn self-reliance. If he can program his BCR, he can jolly well learn to adjust an oxygen mask. Fairly simple thing, just a little rubber band in the back is all it is. Not nearly as complicated as, say, for instance, a seatbelt. The safety lecture continues.
In the unlikely event of a water landing,
well, what exactly is a water landing? Am I mistaken, or does this sound somewhat similar to crashing into the ocean? The flight continues. A little later on, toward the end, we hear...
The captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign.
Well, who gives a who turned it on? What does that have to do with anything? It's on, isn't it? And who made this man a captain? Might I ask? Did I sleep through some sort of an armed forces swearing-in ceremony or something? Captain, he's a pilot, and let him be happy with that. But those sightseeing announcements are any mark of his intellect, he's lucky to be working at all. Tell the captain, Air Marshal Carlin says, go yourself.
And this was in the good old days, when the worst adjective you could think of to describe control of the public in airports was Orwellian. At the time, police state seemed just a little too harsh. No longer. From that innocent point, we wend our way up to the underwear bomber phony play-acting last Christmas. Just a quick note here. The whole underwear bomber incident is so preposterous, so unlikely, that I will say it is obviously phony. A false flag operation of, thank God, staggering ineptness, which seems to be the norm since 2001. In mine humble opinion, the purposes of the underwear bomb charade were, 1, to keep you fearful and obedient, 2, to boost sales of Superman X-ray vision body scanners, which were already being used in a few airports, and 3, to aid the move to continue some of the most oppressive provisions of the Patriot Act. Here's a little-known fact, brothers and sisters. The underwear bomb scam was foisted on us 1 week before some of the worst, most fascistic provisions of the Patriot Act were due to expire. They were due to expire on January 1, 2010. Don't take my word for it. Make like Casey Stengel. You could look it up. But let's go back a few years. After 9/11, the national security state started aggressively flexing their muscles at the airport. Now not just encouraging, but demanding, at gunpoint, public docility and obedience. Here's a humorous and then a semi-humorous narrative from the front lines. First, comedian Jimmy Tingle in a sketch recorded in 2008.
One shoe bomber, folks. For the rest of our lives, everybody has to take off their shoes at the airport. I want to be hopeful. I want to be optimistic. I want to look on the bright side. So let's have a moment of silence and thank the almighty creator. The man wasn't trying to smuggle the bomb in his pants.
Thank you.
That would be a hassle. Welcome to Logan. Take off your pants. Can we bring the bomb-sniffing dog over here for this guy, please? Can we follow him into baggage claim, please?
And because they don't have enough X-ray machines at the airport, okay, they're only X-raying 2% of all the bags that go onto the plane. I said, you're going to be kidding me. We're spending $500 billion a year on national defense. Break down, get $10,000, get an x-ray machine. Would you please? My brother-in-law is a dentist, okay? A dentist. He has two x-ray machines. Every time I see him, he tells me the exact same thing. You know, Jim, you're grinding your teeth. Of course I'm grinding my teeth. They're only checking 2% of the bags. And the questions? The questions they asked us? This is going to keep us safe? Did anybody give you anything to bring onto the plane? Huh. Don't look away. Look at me. I got another question. Did you pack your bags yourself? Don't look away. Look at me. Did you pack him? What are we, on the honor system all of a sudden? It's so infuriating. You want to tell the guy, no, I didn't pack him myself. A stranger from the Middle East packed him. I couldn't believe he knew exactly what to bring. A toothbrush for Mr. Jimmy? Underwear for Mr. Jimmy? Did we pack our bags ourselves? Did anybody give us anything to bring onto the plane? What do they expect us to say? Oh. Wait a second. Wait one second. Now that you mentioned it. Last night, about 11:15, I'm getting ready to turn in. Doorbell rings. And there stood a man I never met before. And he says to me, I heard you're flying out in the morning. Why, yes I am. Can you carry this on the plane for me? Carry this on the plane for you? I don't even know you. What are you gonna do for me? Oh, I can pack your bags.
Jimmy Tingle in late 2008. It's probably from him that the CIA and the Mossad and the Naked Beauty full-body scanner manufacturing company got the idea for the underwear bomber. Now let's hear, in the same vein, remarks by left political scientist Michael Parenti in a talk he gave at the University of Hartford, November 4, 2009.
No-fly lists, harassing people in that way. Every time I come back from Europe, I get yanked out of line. I don't know. Why? I'm coming home and the guy says, you, come here. They talk like that. You, come here. You know, big. And if you want to say, try to be polite or something, you'll be there a weekend, you know. So you know. And I said, yeah. He said, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a writer. He said, give me the title of the last book you wrote. Now, how do you know about a book? I mean, most writers don't write books. They write all sorts of other kinds of copies and stuff. So it wasn't the last book, but it was the best title I wanted to give him. I said, The Assassination of Julius Caesar. I really dwelled on it. His eyes got big like that. When I said, The Assassination, his eyes got big like of Julius Caesar. He didn't know who Julius Caesar was. But he says, so you write books. He says, go over there. And I go over there, and another guy questions me. He says, how are you getting home from the airport? I said, I have a friend picking me up. He said, what's your friend's name? And, you know, I didn't want to tell him her name. It's none of his business. I was actually tempted to say, well, his name is Abdul Muhammad, and and he's just a student. He's here taking flying lessons. And but then I knew I'd be there all night the next day, you know. So, yeah. Another time I came back from Serbia after the war, and stupidly it said, your place of last disembarkment or whatever the word. And I should have put Frankfurt because there was a connecting flight in Frankfurt. Then it would have been fine. I put Belgrade, Serbia. So the guy looks at it. He says, you just came from Siberia. I said, no, Serbia. It's in Europe. Yeah. Go over there. And they went, again, they went through my, this, and I had literature and articles and says, what's this article? I said, that's my article. I'm a writer. That's what I do. I write articles, you see. I said, and they didn't quite know what to do, but they wanted to throw me in jail, you know. I mean, that's the feeling. Well, we don't want them get them to the point where they can automatically throw us in jail. But this is the kind of thing, under the name of security, of keeping us safe and secure, this is the kind of stuff they're pulling on us. And what we have to do is resist and fight back. See the glory down.
As we wend our way to the grand climax of exploding underpants, let's catch a few other recent outrages. Here are parts of a press release from the ACLU. Philadelphia, February 10, 2010. The American Civil Liberties Union today filed a lawsuit on behalf of Pomona College student Nicholas George, who is abusively interrogated, handcuffed, and detained for nearly 5 hours at the Philadelphia International Airport because of a set of English-Arabic flashcards he was carrying in connection with his college language studies. George was on his way back to school in California in August 2009 when he was prompted by Transportation Security Authority, TSA, agents to empty his pockets at an airport security screening point. After producing a set of English-Arabic flashcards, which each had an English word on one side and the corresponding Arabic word on the other side, George was detained and aggressively questioned by TSA agents for 30 minutes. A Philadelphia police officer then handcuffed George and led him to the airport police station, where he was left in a locked cell for 2 hours in handcuffs and for 2 more hours without the handcuffs. George was then interrogated for another half hour by 2 FBI agents. He was never informed of why he was handcuffed, detained, or arrested, and he was not informed of his rights. By the time he was released, George had long since missed his flight. George said, quote, "I want TSA agents to keep flights safe, but I don't understand how locking me up and harassing me just because I was carrying the flashcards made anybody safer. No one should be treated like a criminal for simply learning one of the most widely spoken languages in the world." Unquote. But let's hear the story in George's own words. And we'll also hear of another outrage, when they landed a plane prematurely and detained a young Jewish man. His threat? He was saying his morning prayers on the plane, holding the tefillin, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a string containing a few tiny boxes. Each box holds a printed prayer. It's the Orthodox Jewish equivalent of rosary beads, for Christ's sakes. That triggered an emergency landing. First, though, here's Nicholas George.
I was traveling back to school from Philadelphia to California. When I went up to the metal detector, the woman told me to step aside for the special screening. So I emptied my pockets of everything non-metal that I hadn't already given out, which included a set of Arabic flashcards. Just simple word in English on one side, word in Arabic on the other side, which I was using to study. The vast majority of the flashcards had words like graduate or adjectives like, I don't know, funny. Or things like the verb to smile. First she asked me how I felt about 9/11, which, you know, what's the answer to that question? I thought it was a bad thing. I thought it was a terrible thing. And she asked me if I knew who did it. And I said Osama bin Laden. You know, then she got this real, like, sneer on her face, like she'd caught me in a trap or something, and said, yeah, you know what language Osama bin Laden spoke? And I noticed that there was a police officer behind me who instructed me to put my hands behind my back. I did so, and he put me in handcuffs and started leading me away. I mean, it was just total shock. You know, the whole thing is very surreal. At first, you think, ha, how silly, they're questioning me about my Arabic. It just became more and more confusing as it went on. It just leading me through a very populated airport in handcuffs, like I'd, you know, I don't know, shoplifted or actually done something unsafe for the airplane.
The idea that someone can be arrested and handcuffed and locked in a cell simply for studying a foreign language is illegal and it's unconstitutional.
From the cell, I could see into the police office, and so I could see for the next 4 hours that I was in there, I could see them just poring over my flashcards like they were going to find some secret on them. I saw them photocopying my flashcards. I heard them describing it on their phones to some superior, like, you know, well, it's a small piece of paper with English writing on one side and Arabic writing on the other side. And the longer I was in there, you know, you have the time to transition from being shocked to being really angry and saying, you know, this is just wrong. They have nothing on me, I've done nothing wrong, and here I am locked in a cell for 4 hours.
Well, Priya, apparently now passengers can get in trouble at U.S. airports for simply studying a foreign language.
Wow, well, maybe they thought he had the answer to some of those questions on his flashcards or something. But seriously, I mean, this isn't the only controversial case involving the TSA. Have you heard of other cases like this one that's happened since the attempted Christmas Day bombing?
Well, Priya, you know, ever since the attempted Christmas Day bombing, it really seems like airport officials haven't been shy to come up with more and more surprises for their travelers. Well, another case of ethnic profile has really sparked a lot of controversy recently when a Jewish young man on an airplane put on tefillin. This is several small leather boxes with prayer that are used for prayers. He wanted to carry out his morning prayer. The flight attendant saw this, freaked out, and the airplane was landed so this young man could be questioned. And of course, we're all familiar with the story of the 8-year-old boy, Michael Hicks, whose family and himself have been going through repeated frisking and security checks. Every time he goes through the airport, they have been held for hours since he was 2 years old because he happens to have the same name that a person in the security's watch list has.
Interesting to see what the TSA does in the name of security. Anastasia joining us live from our New York studios.
I just had a flash of the old magazine ads for Maidenform bras. Remember them? Maybe 1960. Each ad depicted a woman's fantasy of doing something in public while wearing only the sponsor's product above the waist. They had headlines like, "I dreamed I played Carnegie Hall in my Maidenform bra." They never got to, "I dreamed I blew up an airliner with high-powered explosives in my Maidenform bra and panties." We hear versions of this unlikely story by Jim Hightower and by John Stewart. Let me just mention a few things that these guys don't mention. The bomber's father supposedly ratted on his son to the U.S. State Department 5 weeks earlier, right? Obviously a scam. Nigeria has a very capable internal security apparatus, I believe trained and supported by both Mossad and the CIA. There was no need to very publicly contact the United States. Some folks at home could have leaned on the son just enough to show him the error of his ways, if that's what the father wanted. Secondly, neither Hightower nor Stewart mentions that the lad somehow boarded a flight from Nigeria to Amsterdam without a passport, then somehow changed planes in Amsterdam and boarded a flight to Detroit without a passport. No coat, no luggage, no passport. Thank God he wasn't carrying Arabic flashcards. That might have made the authorities suspicious. I will venture the opinion that in Lagos, nobody gets near an international flight without a passport, unless some very high authority instructs the airport security staff to let it happen. And I will venture that nobody without a passport ever gets near any international flight in Amsterdam, either, unless some very high authority instructs the airport security staff to let it happen. The whole underwear bomber story is so preposterous on its face, it doesn't even deserve rebuttal. Okay, here's Jim Hightower from an essay in Common Dreams, January 6. It's titled, "Anti-Terrorism Officials Are Regulating Us, Not Terrorists." Thanks to the fizzled shoe bomb incident aboard a 2001 flight, they still require all of us to bow to the gods of global terrorism by removing our booties and putting our tiny tubes of toothpaste into little zippy bags. This ridiculous ritual, we are told, will fend off another shoe bomber. But terrorists seem to be somewhat adaptive. Gosh, who could have imagined it? So the latest attack comes not from shoes, but from a guy's shorts. "The only way to stop this," cry the knee-jerkers, "is to have authorities peek under every passenger's skivvies." Corporate profiteers are peddling super-sophisticated X-ray machines with Superman eyes. You will have to stand in the scanner and spread your legs and raise your arms in the arrest position to give your friendly scanner a front and back full body look right through your clothes. Body contours of every man, woman, and child who flies will be on the screen, and some images will almost certainly pop up on the internet. "So what?" bark the authorities. "Freedom comes at a price, and this new rule is about us protecting you." Really? Let's note that one of the big backers of full-body technology is former Homeland Security honcho Michael Chertoff. Sidebar comment, the guy who did such a fine job protecting New Orleans. Back to the text. In dozens of interviews he gave after the Christmas incident, Chertoff demanded nationwide deployment of these machines to stop more underwear attacks by terrorists. Now, guess whose Washington consulting firm represents Rapiscan Systems, one of the main contractors selling the machines to the government? Right, Chertoff's firm. Our authorities want us to pay in cash and liberties for a whiz-bang technological gimmick that will enrich a couple of corporations, but will do nothing to stop the next thing the terrorists come up with. My own comment, that's because fighting terrorism is in fact not the actual goal of these moves. Well, let's hear John Stewart's take on this sordid affair.
So what are the Al-Qaeda masterminds of terror 2.0 cook-up?
Federal investigators say the man accused of the attempted bombing, Umar Abdul Muttalib, hid a powerful explosive powder in specially made underwear.
So even if the bomb works, there's going to be 72 very disappointed virgins. Now, whenever there's an incident like this, the question is always, could we have seen it coming? But in this case, a Nigerian guy from Yemen with doomsday underpants? It seems to come out of nowhere.
As early as August of 2009, the Central Intelligence Agency was picking up information on a person of interest dubbed the Nigerian.
The suspect already on a U.S. terror watch list.
Put there after his father, a Nigerian banker, told the U.S. 5 weeks ago that he was worried his son was becoming radicalized.
Okay, all right, I too have a tendency to ignore messages from Nigerian bankers who wish to help me. When they show up in person and aren't asking for a money order, but instead turning in their own son, maybe that conversation doesn't get filed under spam.
His visa had been yanked by the British. He paid cash for his ticket.
Yeah.
It was a one-way ticket.
Paid nearly $3,000 in cash for his plane ticket and checked no bags.
What? It's December! He's going from Nigeria to Amsterdam to Detroit without a coat? With a one-way ticket? Oh, do you think he's going to Detroit to start a better life? What do you think, he's going there because he heard there's lots of jobs? You know what, intelligence community? Meet me at camera three. All right, I know you guys are busy. Those 300 million Americans can't wiretap themselves, but remember something. This guy, Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, he paid cash, he flew one way, he had no luggage from a European capital and tried to blow up a plane with PETN explosives hidden in his shoes 8 years ago. So now, 8 years later, the Lex Luthor-like geniuses of Al-Qaeda decided, I got an idea. This time, why don't we have a guy pay cash and fly one way, no luggage from a European capital with the PETN explosives hidden under his... In 8 years... All they did was move the explosive up, whatever the inseam measurement is. Changing nothing else about the modus operandi. I realize security will never be 100%. We don't expect you to catch everything. But we do expect you to catch the exact same thing. At least we caught the guy. 8 years ago, we depended on passengers to subdue plane terrorists. At least we've come a long way since then.
The suspect, identified as Umar Farouk Abdul Muttalib, was tackled by passengers and apprehended.
So in 8 years, we've had two wars to overthrow terror-supporting regimes, trillions of dollars, thousands of lives, and our best defense against terrorism continues to be alert passenger tackles guy trying to light his...